WICN in Worcester, this is the Venture Forum, tales of entrepreneurship from central Massachusetts. I'm your host, Mark Reed Edwards, Executive Director of the Venture Forum. Now let's start today's tale. This week's guest on the Venture Forum is none other than Dr. Charles Steinberg, president of the Worcester Red Sox, the Woo Sox. He's in his fifth year as president of the club, which just moved to Polar Park in Worcester from Pawtucket, after many years as executive vice president of the Boston Red Sox, in a vast career in which he has also worked with the Baltimore Orioles, San Diego Padres, Los Angeles Dodgers, and Commissioner Bud Selig. Dr. Charles has helped re-energize the Woo Sox here in Worcester while leading their effort to aggressively reach out to the community. Dr. Charles, it is great to have you on the Venture Forum.
Well, thank you, Mark. It's great to be with you. And we've met so many people, and we wanted to keep meeting people and talking to people and most importantly, listening.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. I was in one of the sessions that the Chamber did with you and Larry Lucchino, and it was just wonderful seeing the energy around it. And I said, I've got to have Dr. Charles on the show.
Well, thank you. The energy, you know, I guess Larry and I have intrinsic energy fueled by our love of baseball and what we do. But the energy in Worcester has been a major source of inspiration to us.
Yeah.
We really respond to the energy we've been feeling.
Yeah, it's been great. And it's just it's a beautiful ballpark, the whole thing. I want to kind of start by asking you about your career path. People's career paths really fascinate me. And can you share how you moved into baseball and worked with that list of great teams, including the Red Sox, where you guys brought home, you know, multiple championships?
Well, thank you. Sometimes it confounds people to wonder how a dentist got right into baseball,
yeah,
because that is my doctorate and that is my profession. But the career path starts with something that I'm now a passionate advocate of, and that was an internship.
Yeah.
In the last month of senior year of high school in Baltimore at Gilman School, the teachers knew that in a college preparatory school, we would have all gotten our acceptance and rejection letters by April 15th, and therein could set senior slump.
Yeah.
So to combat that, they set up a program that we now would call an internship. Back then, we weren't even using that word. It was Project Encounter. And the school would set us up with volunteer jobs, we called it, in the community. And although I adored the Baltimore Orioles, I never knew you could even dream of spending a month with them. And I was going to do something that I thought was adventurous. My parents are gone now, but my dad was an orthodontist. And I thought I'd be bold and daring and work for a friend of his who was a pediatric dentist. I thought that was expanding my horizon, shows you what I know. And a buddy of mine walked down the hall and said, I heard they'll let us work for the Orioles. I'm like, it was breathtaking. You know, you gasped.
Yeah.
And that 1 month internship is now 45 years old. It's now starting its 46th season. So the 1 month of pasting articles about the team in scrapbooks and stamping the names of players on slides, then driving the slides in the Orioles station wagon. I mean, what a thrill for a 17-year-old from Baltimore, driving those slides to the three television stations was just beyond a dream. And I thought at 17 I had peaked, and maybe I had. But the Orioles asked me to help them out from time to time throughout that summer, and I happily did. Now we're talking about moving boxes of giveaway items from the storeroom to the gate so that your helmets are there for you on helmet night, your t-shirts are there for you on t-shirt night. And they even let me sit in the press box, the back row, to help with a manual makeshift board of out-of-town for updates for the media. So all of that was a one-time lark, and the 1 month wound up spreading through that summer after high school. And then I started college at the University of Maryland in the honors program, where you were going to get serious about, you know, your college career and studying for dental school, because that still had appeal to me. And the Orioles said, will you come back next summer? I'm like, yeah.
Where do you I know, sign up? Yeah,
exactly. And they said, we'll even pay you. And I'm like, who asked you? But thank you. And I thought that next summer was just a one-year extension. And they asked me to do something. I thought they were kidding. They said, we do the statistics that our manager, Earl Weaver, uses religiously, faithfully, and you're going to help. Well, I'm sitting there with my blue medium point Bic pen doing Earl Weaver's statistics, and I thought I had died and gone to heaven, unless you made a mistake, and then you thought you died and gone the other way. And it was just amazing. And they asked me to come back again. And I'm a little slow. Each year, I really thought was my last. And it kept going and growing. And when I got into dental school, I thought that might be the end. But the University of Maryland Dental School is in Baltimore. And it allowed me to keep going through dental school. And by the time I graduated from dental school, I had had the eureka moment of, I know, I'll be the team dentist.
Yeah.
And they said yes. So now I think I'm going to be a normal, typical Jewish dentist in Baltimore, but the dentist for the Orioles. But the work in the office after 9 years was so exhilarating, so rewarding, so inspiring, because I'm still just a 10-year-old kid who got in. And I said to myself, you know, rather than shut the door on this work that they have been giving me, I'm now writing the scoreboard messages, I'm writing the public address announcement. Maybe since in dentistry you can be your own boss, I'll just keep the dentistry part-time for now, and let's see how far this goes. And that was one of the most important judgments I ever made in my life. And the Orioles work just blossomed. And while I was treating the players as the team dentist, I did keep it part-time working with dentists who practiced full-time, several of them, friends of my dad and contemporaries from dental school. And that's how the story grew. So it's not the typical path, and not everyone who wants a career in baseball needs to be a dentist, but that did turn out to be the route for me. By the way, as well as the route for a manager in Worcester in 1925, he had gone to, I believe before it was Case Western, it was just Case Dental School, and he's another Charles. How about that?
Wow, that's something. That's a bit of trivia. Maybe we'll find that on Jeopardy someday.
So that's chapter one.
Yeah, yeah. It's but what a game, baseball, to kind of grow up loving the Orioles, and just through, you know, almost kind of happenstance, you end up working for them and thinking it's going to be temporary, but it ends up becoming a career. That's amazing.
And imagine what it's like for a child who loves his hometown team, and loving baseball is a tremendously important part of a career in baseball, because the stamina that's required uses your love as fuel. So imagine going behind the curtain and seeing what Brooks Robinson is really like, and having him reward the faith you have in him, the heroism that you accord, by going into the clubhouse one day, and there he is alone in the clubhouse, sitting in front of his locker in his underwear with a giant cardboard box of fan mail, and there he is signing every piece himself. I've said before, and I got to say it, fortunately, at his statue dedication at Camden Yards, do you know how validating it is for a 17-year-old to see that your hero is worthy of the heroism that you accord him? And Brooks has just never let me down. He is still, all these years later, the nicest, most congenial, most accommodating baseball star, as well as being the greatest defensive third baseman in the history of the game.
Amazing. Sometimes they say don't meet your heroes, but in that case, you know, it worked out.
Well, that's just it. What would have happened if it had gone the other way? The Hall of Fame broadcaster for the Orioles, Chuck Thompson, what would it have been like if I had found him to be other than the warm, wonderful person he was on the air? But he was. The PA announcer, a Brooklyn Dodgers fireballer named Rex Barney, they were all wonderful behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Years later, when Frank Robinson returned to the Orioles as a coach, I would see his surly exterior, but I was able to penetrate, and he became one of the dearest people that I've ever known in baseball. My best friend wound up being Eddie Murray, best friend among those who played, a Hall of Fame first baseman with a serious, surly reputation with the media. But behind the curtain, he was as chatty as I am, and that's saying a lot.
It's interesting when you think about the public persona of famous people, athletes in this case, that can be completely different from what they're like in private. That, you know, a lot of, you know, you think of rock stars or, you know, funny athletes who are major extroverts in their private life, they can be very quiet.
They can. But what was so fascinating, from Eddie Murray in Baltimore to Jim Rice in Boston, was to see that the fierce exterior had two rationales. One, to intimidate the pitcher, because these are supremely competitive Hall of Famers. The other is to keep the media at a distance so that your heroism and stardom does not separate you from the team. The great players did not want the media attention because they didn't want to be more than one of 25 on the team. What I worked with some of them on was to say, look, take the attention, but use that spotlight to shed light on your teammate. Yes, you hit a 3-run homer in the bottom of the 8th inning to propel the team to the win. But, and so therefore the media congregates around your locker. But teach them that home run wouldn't have even happened were it not for the inning-ending double play in the bottom of the 5th inning by a player who may have gone 0-for-4. So that's part of it. But along the way at the Orioles, the attorney for the club became the president of the club, and that was Larry Lucchino, and it was he who had the idea for an old-fashioned downtown ballpark with modern amenities. And I, a perpetual intern, was the low man on the totem pole while he was the right hand to the owner, Edward Bennett Williams. And that's where our relationship began. And that is a 42-year tale that has led us to San Diego, to Boston. I then went to the Dodgers and the commissioner's office, rejoined Larry in Boston, in Pawtucket, and now here with the 5th ballpark that Larry has been a part of, Polar Park in Worcester. And this ballpark is worthy of his Hall of Fame resume.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. One thing we're really focused on here at the Venture Forum is mentoring, pairing up people who need help with people who have experience. And I'm always interested in learning about the mentors of our guests. Did you have a mentor or mentors? It sounds like maybe you had multiple when you started your career.
Look, I was blessed to have two wonderful parents and a big sister. So I think that you find that so many people are appreciative when they do have two parents, one marriage, more than 50 years. I think you have to start there. Once you establish that as an emotional foundation, before I even go to the Orioles, I have a wall in my home. It's a wall of teachers. It starts with my parents, but the headmaster, you might call that a principal in a lot of schools, of my school, Reddy Finney, Redmond C.S. Finney, he was a mentor and a fabulous hero. But now when you get to the Orioles, my boss at the Orioles, Bob Brown, was the number one PR director in baseball. He won the first award that they established for public relations excellence after the person won it for whom they named the award, Bob Fischel. So for 9 years, Bob Brown was a mentor teaching excellence, teaching English, and teaching high standard. Now, as I worked with them in year four, that's when Larry Lupino joined, and Larry became a lifelong mentor. Teaching English, teaching excellence, teaching high standard, teaching resourcefulness, perseverance. It can be done. There's always a way. It is within the wit of man to solve the problem. You just did not quit. You did not relent. So Larry has been a mentor for 42 years. So too was his best friend, who lived to be 87 before passing away. His name was Jay Emmett, and he had had a career in the entertainment industry. He was head of Warner Communications, and he was a mentor. Then I had the honor of getting to know Bud Selig from 1985 on, and when he invited me to come work for him in two separate stints, working for him as commissioner and then working for him as Commissioner Emeritus when he was working on his memoirs, he's been a mentor. There are others too, but I've been blessed to have mentors, and I recognize that young people are looking up to you to see how is it that you've managed this 45-year career with seven, you know, championship rings, including five World Series, one American League and one National League pennant. And it's beyond the rings. It's how you have created a phenomenon through baseball in each of the opportunities that we've been given.
And the example that was set for you by Brooks Robinson and the other fellows that you were interacting with, who were really decent people.
Absolutely. Decent, kind, loving. And, you know, I never have seen Brooks Robinson turned down a request for an autograph. And I once, or several times, chatted with him about it. And with his Little Rock, Arkansas twang still present, he would say, "Charlie, it's faster to sign than to explain why you can't."
All right, we'll be back with Dr. Charles Steinberg of the Worcester Red Sox, the Woo Sox, in just a moment. Back with Dr. Charles Steinberg of the Worcester Red Sox. Let's talk about the Woo Sox. I'm sure there were many moving parts, but I'm interested in what attracted the team to move to Worcester. Can you share what that journey was like? I'm sure it's not an easy story, but I'd love to hear it.
There are train tracks that parallel Route 146 that connects Pawtucket and Rhode Island to Worcester. And if we use that metaphor, Larry was the locomotive of this train. I was the last to buy in. I was the last to believe that we weren't going to stay in Pawtucket. The team had been in Pawtucket. There's always a way. We'll get it done. And Larry negotiated a 30-year agreement with the mayor of Pawtucket, with the Rhode Island Commerce Commission, and we stood there on a sun-splashed May 16th, 2017, and declared, Pawtucket is home. We are staying here, pending legislature approval. Now, I thought those words were fine print. Well, the state Senate took up the issue, did a rigorous and thorough examination, and agreed. But when the bill then went to the House of Representatives, the Speaker of the House pronounced it dead, and it never really recovered. And Larry Lucchino had said, I will stay with you as long as I can, but if it's not passed in this session, I owe it to my partners to at least return the calls to the 18 other cities that had reached out and said, look, if Pawtucket doesn't want you, we do. Well, the truth is Pawtucket did. Mayor Grevion was first class. Love him. Absolutely love him. But he didn't get the support of his state counterparts. So Larry returns a call to the city manager of Worcester, Ed Augustus, who had been empowered by the mayor and the city council, who had been empowered by the governor and the lieutenant governor and members of his cabinet, including Jay Ash, to try to get it done. There was harmony, there was unity between the city of Worcester and the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. You can talk all day about business, finance, legal, negotiations, have at it. It's a pretty mundane process. What the real story was the human synergy. People across the aisles, Republicans and Democrats, working together to be cute, woo the sock. And they did. And while they were doing that, for 9 months, I paid no attention. I tuned it out. I focused on Pawtucket and Rhode Island because I didn't believe we were going to leave. And after 9 months, Larry said, it troubles me that you have paid no attention to Worcester during this process because I think it's a viable alternative. And I always have spoken with candor to Larry, but I'm also loyal to him. Both, they go together, candor and loyalty. I said, look, Larry, I just think we're going to stay here. He goes, you need to get Worcester to see whether you agree with me that it is a viable alternative. And on Wednesday, May 9th, 2018, while Larry had already been 9 months into talks with Worcester, I stuck my toe in the water for the first time, went to a meeting with a host of leaders, men and women, and walked out of there saying, I understand what Larry sees. I still think we're staying in Rhode Island, but I get it. Then 13 days later, on May 22nd, I went to a meeting with the city manager's staff, and that's when my head turned. The sincerity, the love, the compassion, the passion, the devotion to the city of Worcester was evident, it was obvious, and it was emotional. And one of the folks just said, I'm sorry, I love my city. And I thought, whoa, this is real. And that began my love affair with Worcester because it was a city abounding in love and pride and passion and compassion. And throughout that summer of 2018, I still thought we were going to stay in Rhode Island. But I saw with every passing day that the excitement in Worcester, the excitement in Central Mass, and the sincerity of the people was unlike anything I had seen. Now look, we had lived in many cities, Baltimore, San Diego, Boston, Los Angeles, Milwaukee, when I worked for Commissioner Steele, but the welcome, the plea, and the plea in Worcester was different from any other city. And when we announced on August 17, 2018, that we were coming to Worcester, Larry Lucchino got the first standing ovation for such an announcement in his career. And 1 month later, the city rolled out by the thousands for that grand and glorious civic celebration. It was a hero's welcome, and I just felt great for Larry, because in Baltimore, we looked at him quizzically because the team, he might have moved the team to Washington. In San Diego, they looked at him quizzically because we took over a team in the depth of a strike and a nadir of popularity. In Boston, they looked at him quizzically. You're not from here. Why are you here? In Pawtucket, they looked at him quizzically because his partner had declared that they wanted to move the team to Providence. But here in Worcester, for the first time in his career, there was an ovation that reflected the love and the passion of the city. And I was thrilled for Larry. And that love affair flourishes to this day. And when he walks on the main concourse and people walk up to him and thank him, it's really a very deeply personal story. And that's why I say you could take all of the business mumbo jumbo you want, put it in a little box, but this is a human story.
Yeah, and baseball is a human story, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's something that you learn to love as a little kid, and it follows you through your life, whether you can play it or not.
Right. And to those who play, and play well, and play hard, and play successfully, I not only tip my cap, I look up to them, because I represent the ones who couldn't. Yes, I could make my way through wiffle ball. But when you get two hits in 2 years of Little League, and both hits come in the second year, you're not going to succeed Brooks Robinson at third base for the Baltimore Orioles. But you can still love the game. And the game, to use to answer a question asked in the movie Fever Pitch by the little boy, says, but did the team ever love you back? That's our career.
Yeah.
To love the people back. Because we know the love they have, and we feel the love in return.
We are having such a great discussion with Dr. Charles Steinberg of the Woo Sox that we're going to come back next week with part two, so stay tuned. Thanks for joining us for this episode of The Venture Forum from WICN in Worcester. Learn more at theventureforum.org and join us next week as we share tales of entrepreneurship from Central Massachusetts.